The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler back with you here, halfway through the last show of the week. It is St. Patrick's Day here at 710 KNUS and everywhere else. I am pleased to be joined on the line right now with a VIP. His name is Peter Lafari. Candidly, I met Peter a matter of hours ago, like, I don't know, 48, 76 hours ago, some sort of math like that. We ended up serving on a panel together down in Colorado Springs to talk about some big hot-button issues in advance of a very heated mayor's race that's going on down there. I was the crime dude from Common Sense Institute, and Peter was the housing fellow for Common Sense Institute. And I got to say, I was sitting up there listening. There was four of us up there. I was the dumbest of the four of us. That was obvious. I would just make a lot of monosyllabic kind of answers and grunts. And these guys were saying things that were fascinating to me. And Peter was talking about affordable housing and what we can do, and frankly, what we've done to ourselves to keep that from being a reality. And I thought, man, I want to have this conversation with you, the listeners, at 710. So, Peter, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, George. Appreciate that warm intro, and right back at you.
Listen, before we get into it, and I do this with everybody, tell us a little bit about your background. And when I say background, yeah, you definitely hit the education pieces, but I also like to know where folks went to high school and what did you do there? Like, did you have a sport, an extracurricular? It just sort of tells me about your background.
Yeah, thanks, George. Appreciate that, you know, share my origin story. So I grew up, I was born in New York City, moved to Long Island, spent my formative years on the island, graduated from Smithtown High School, played baseball, didn't play baseball in high school, long lover of sports, art. My first love was art, thought I'd be kind of an art professor, painter, was always good with words, went to art school, kind of realized that wasn't my calling, and then 9/11 happened, and like most Americans of our generation, you know, felt a calling to serve, and found my way to working as a civilian contractor in support of national security. And so spent a little over a decade working with folks to help them, and well, to help our country ensure that they were the right types of personalities and individuals to safeguard our precious secrets and defend our nation. And spent a great amount of time going across the country, meeting fabulous people from all walks of life, breaking bread with them, being able to get to know who they are, honor where they are from and their culture and history. And that's what brought me to Denver. And during that period, I got my MBA and decided that it was really a calling to look at affordable housing and housing stability as national security, considering how, you know, we just lose our precious youth so young to the streets, essentially, because there's a lot of volatility, trauma, pain, and abuse, and they don't see a future for themselves in our great country. And so they try to create their own. And as we know, you know, our society wins, and they wind up being incarcerated. And by the time they kind of have an epiphany, it's really hard for them to be able to reintegrate into society and benefit their community. It's not impossible, but it's just difficult. And so for me, I view affordable housing, housing attainability as national security. I think our lack of it has driven a significant percentage of our societal unrest as individuals struggle to, you know, make their way and accomplish the American dream. And that's really why I'm here. So I appreciate you giving me a chance to be able to share that.
Yeah, of course. I want to go back, though, because there's some things that you didn't yet talk about that are going to be important for people to appreciate. One, Long Island, were you Suffolk or Nassau side?
Suffolk.
So rich kid. I get it. Okay. And Yankees or Mets?
Yankees, man. A big Don Mattingly fan.
You just sold yourself. Oh, my God. Me too. Me too. The magic
Donnie
number
baseball.
23. Oh, Donnie Baseball. Yeah, Go ahead.
And just, you know, I'll share with you, you know, it was interesting. You know, my dad, musician on and off throughout his life, my mom, emergency room nurse. We, my grandmother came over from Sicily in the early 1900s, lived in Little Italy, just abject poverty. But she was a talented seamstress and a really a savvy entrepreneur. And, you know, folks still fell in love and got married during the Great Depression, and they did okay. My grandfather was intermittently homeless. Same situation, came over from Southern Italy. His dad was struggled with alcoholism, so and was abusive to his mom. And so he was homeless in and out, but he worked for Nabisco, which fed the troops. And so they did okay. They did pretty good. And they moved to the country, which is at what they called Astoria, Queens, and bought a home, and they used an FHA loan. And really, as I got into this work, I had heard of redlining before. I didn't realize it until, you know, for me, like, we benefited. If we were people, if we were black, if we were brown, we would not have received that loan. And I share this because we almost lost our house when I was in third grade. And that really was a turning point in my life. That was the end of my childhood, essentially. I grew up and stopped asking for stuff, stopped trying to play sports. But thankfully, we were able to sell grandmother's house, and she came to live with us, and that was able to buy our next house, so we didn't lose it. We were about to lose our home, and it was dangerous. And so, you know, just for me, I think, you know, yes, I was privileged to live in a home and have a loving family, but, you know, I experienced some housing insecurity at a young age, and it didn't really hit me until I got back into this industry, just how that kind of is the story a bit of the American housing experience that we're trying to write, you know, some of those dynamics so that everybody has a chance to own a home and be able to pursue happiness.
The other thing that was interesting to me about this, and you've got now, I get the passion now that you bring to this topic, but you know, the path you were on, and by the way, my dad was a Jamaica Queens kid. So some of the same DNA is running through us there. But you've got the left brain thing going on, which is all the art and the art and the art. And then all of a sudden it feels like, and maybe you tell me if I'm wrong, it's a right brain shift to some of more of these pragmatic, more mathematical is probably the wrong word, but analysis and attempts to answer some of these problems that are plaguing us about housing. I don't know how you make that transition. And maybe you're just one of those geniuses that you've got both pieces of your brain going at equal speeds, but that's fascinating to make that transition. The parts of your conversation the other day when we were on the panel, and we're talking with Common Sense Institute's Peter LaFari, he's the housing fellow, that were fascinating to me is how we ended up here. And some of the questions from the crowd, too, are like, how do we fix this? How do we get past this? Nobody argues that housing is out of control in Colorado. And some of the things you said, like, this is what the status quo is. We're doing this to ourselves. I'm like, damn, I didn't know any of that. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, you know, I think culturally we're at this inflection point where we just can't figure out how we're going to house our fellow Americans, our fellow Coloradans, our neighbors. We're deeply divided, right? And George, you speak very, you know, astutely and elegantly on this, is that, you know, and there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of unrest, there's a lot of concern, and that's natural. I don't like blaming or shaming anyone. You know, we're all, you know, children of God. Like, honestly, I don't think people wake up in the morning and look to do harm to others. It's just like we don't really understand the parameters of the game, right? And so we're all kind of going on our own direction. And housing is the epitome of this, is we've, you know, for a long time, we were kind of, we built a ton of starter homes, right, throughout the majority of our modern history, right, until about the, you know, the 90s and 2000s. I used a data point when we were chatting in Colorado Springs, was that 40% of all the homes built in America in 1980 were starter homes. That's 1,200 square feet or less. And last year, it was less than 9%. And, you know, it really comes back to how we planned, really. We're still developing our communities and our cities in the model that we created really in the 50s and 60s, where we had a more abundant greenfield land to be able to develop. The proliferation of modern manufacturing made America, you know, the greatest and most powerful country in the world. We liberated the entire world off of the brave men and women that fought in the Pacific and European theaters, using that American ingenuity and exceptionalism and commitment to freedom. And you know, we had the same type of approach, but that is no longer available to us. And so, you know, we can't just continue to, you know, pull down or develop our agricultural lands, our open space lands. Water is scarce, and you know, dispersed aggregate, you know, disaggregated housing types are really difficult from an efficiency standpoint. But, you know, we have this cultural idea of having, you know, a quarter acre lot with a single family home. It's a fantastic dynamic, but it's really unattainable at this point. And so we're grappling with how we're going to transform. And really what's happened, George, is over the last 20 years or so in Colorado, we've averaged in 77,000 new heartbeats. Some of that is folks that were born here. Majority of that is folks that moved to our state, to benefit from our bounty. But we only built about 22,000 homes per year during that period. And so some of that was exacerbated by the Great Recession. Obviously, liquidity dropped up. You couldn't develop. But after that, we just seem to have, you know, kind of forgotten how to develop. And allow and create a regulatory framework where the free market enterprise system can work its proven magic. And it's really come back to bite us. Now, what we used to consider, what was traditionally considered affordable housing, really, which is about 60% of area median income and below, rents that are kind of indexed to that. We could talk a little bit more if you'd like. But because of the acute housing shortfall, now there is individuals in our state earning up to 140% of AMI in our high country areas, our rural resort areas, 80% of AMI, 100% here in the Front Range that can't find homes. And a big part of that is condo defects. Construction defects has just gutted the ability for developers, both public and private, mission and, you know, for-profit, to be able to deliver that party line attached product, which acts as a pressure relief valve for both sides.
When you say condo defect, you and I know what you're talking about. But for folks that aren't familiar with the whole home building experience, what are you talking about, and how does it impact the ability or willingness to develop those lower entry level homes?
Yeah, you know, it's essentially, you know, it's 9 out of every 10 projects, closer even to almost 10 out of every 10, you know, home building communities, the developers are sued. And essentially, just to cut to the chase, is that, you know, good intentions went wrong, right? We want to make sure that the homes that are produced are of highest quality and provide a long-term, you know, stable product for Coloradans to be able to live their lives in. And so, but what's happened is that because of, there's 2001 bill that essentially made it very easy for HOAs to, on a simple majority vote, be able to speculatively litigate developers for any number of reasons. If, you know, good friend Ted Lighty leads the HBA here in town, he describes, he's like, look, if you're supposed to have 6 nails by code and you only have 5, and that's discovered, you know, that's a defect, right? And that could trigger litigation. And so with the litigation risk being so acute, developers have moved out of that space. Traditionally, developers in Colorado would provide about 20% of their offerings as that attached product. And now it's less than 8%. There was a bit of a relief that came in 2017, George, that was affixed to try to, you know, mitigate some of that, but at the same time, keep quality standards where they need to be. And we thought that there was a good effort coming out of that. There, we saw a spike in party line in attached condos, townhouses during that period. But then there was additional litigation. And so folks have pulled back. And so, you know, there needs to be a better balance there. And, you know, we could spend a whole hour on that. But ultimately, we can do better.
I think what I hear you
regard.
Saying, Peter, is blame the attorneys, which I do all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah. You know, and that's the day, right? They're going to do what they want to do. And if there's a profit motive there, it's really difficult for them to not move forward. But it's gotten out of control, and it's hindering the ability for first-time home buyers. It's also hindering the ability for folks that, you know, are in there, you know, that are seniors, they're looking to downsize, and they want to have a more affordable product that they can move into. They're not ready for assisted living. It's not something they desire, and that's not there either. So we've got a bunch of folks in Colorado that are overhoused, that really traditionally would be moving out of that home, providing that opportunity for folks to step up from a townhome product that was their first purchase, right? So the whole continuum is fractured, and everyone is feeling the pain, and frankly, we're kind of at each other's throats over it, right?
I think that's true. I had never heard that term overhoused, but it's interesting to me that we have created some stagnation in the progression that would have freed up some otherwise available homes for folks. There was something else, and we're talking with Peter LaFari. He is a fellow for Common Sense Institute for Housing. There was something else that you had talked about, which because I don't build stuff, I'm not aware that this is true, but you had focused as much on code as you had on the legislation. Like, this is not just a legislative fix. They can certainly address the liability piece. I get that. But you were talking about how just code itself dictates what we do with the land and the buildings that we have. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, and it starts with zoning codes, building codes as well. And, you know, zoning is an effective way to ensure that certain uses don't infringe upon livability, right? Like, we don't want to have mass manufacturing popping up in community neighborhoods. So there's good intentions here, but you know, the way we used to build homes, George, right? The majority of homes that we all love and desire, they were built out of a catalog, right? You had the Sears Roebuck catalog, you'd purchase right. your home kit, you'd throw it on your lot, and you were basically able to put it on there. But over time, you know, with good intentions, again, going bad, we start saying, okay, well, there has to be a certain level of setbacks. There's only a certain percentage of the land that you own that you can build a structure on. That's called floor area ratio. Height limitations, right? Again, good intentions. We don't want to block the sun or views from our fellow neighbors. And so we're going to limit heights. But when you add all these things together, or the one that I mentioned that I'm obsessed with lately called point access blocks, which is essentially
that was the big one,
a building style. Yeah, yeah. And so again, right, like, so we have two egresses required for, you know, for multifamily products, right? And essentially that means you have to have two stairs and two elevators, right? So make sure that Coloradans can, in the event, God forbid, that there's a fire or some sort of emergency, that everybody can get out. But what we found is that the fire safety outcomes for two egress buildings are actually worse than what we're seeing throughout Europe and really the rest of the world in these point access blocks. So point access blocks is essentially one egress, right? And so that allows us to maximize our lot usage and put the square footage that we're paying for, we're heating and cooling, greenhouse gas, etc., right, into you know, livable space. And so I developed double loaded quarters. They look like hotels. I'm very proud of them. They're beautiful buildings, but they're not exactly family friendly. They're the way they lie themselves. Like, if you've been in a hotel, right, we all have, like, you know, one of the units on one side of the quarter faces south, the other one faces north. One gets right. better daylight than others. Maybe you're an end unit, you're a corner unit, that's a three bedroom, and there's cross ventilation and daylighting. That's really rare in the double loaded corridors, and that's driven by code. And so one of the things that I'm challenging ourselves to ask is, can we create a building code and an entitlement process that allows us to build the types of homes that Coloradans desire? Because right now, because we restrict where we allow multifamily product to be built, the vast majority of land in our cities across the state are zoned only for single family homes on one lot. Again, kind of going back to the, you know, kind of the 50s, 60s, 70s dynamic, that's no longer feasible land costs. And so what's happened is we've created this scarcity and constraint, which has driven the cost of land that we are permitted to build multifamily on to heights that only allow us to pencil out deals that are viable with a lot of density. And so that's why folks see these really bulky, really large, very expensive, primarily one bedroom and two bedrooms, non-family friendly homes that most neighborhoods and communities really don't like, and they don't want that. So when most Americans, we haven't really seen what we're capable of developing from a multifamily mixed income housing continuum, and that's where we need to address the codes. Because really what I've been saying, George, is, like, if we have, you know, kind of modest, you know, kind of upzoning to allow for duplexes, you know, triplexes and quads with the point access block, you know, that I just described, and some, you know, reduction of setback requirements, asking us to reduce our dependence on parking because it's extremely expensive to do that. Well, then we can have products that are 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, 6 units or 4 units, much gentler density that is not looking like the multifamily communities that so many Coloradans just don't appreciate. And so it comes back to those codes. It has to be holistic and it has to include community members. It can't just be by fiat. But at the same time, too, then we have to empower the free market system to work its magic and not constrain homeowners' ability and developers' ability to maximize their land and be able to facilitate the types of products that Coloradans desire and can afford.
This is another story of how government stifles the market and limits ingenuity. I appreciate all that. That's your right brain trying to free up your left brain there. Real quickly, in the short period of time that we have left, though, how hard is it to change building code where you live? Is this something if people wanted to get engaged and say, hey, why are we doing it this way? How hard is that?
Yeah, I think it's not hard in theory. It's hard in practice, right? As we move through the engagement process and elected officials who are duty bound to serve their constituents and right. So they're going to be pragmatic and they're going to be, you know, risk adverse. We're going to have to engage on the point access point. We're going to have to engage our fire chiefs so they understand the data and they can ensure the fire safety. They'd be sprinklered. Right. There's this great bill out of Washington state right now that's moving forward that provides that great clarity. But you can petition your local government to include it in their building code. It's chosen not to be included currently. But if there is a groundswell of community driven support, locally elected officials can amend their code accordingly. Or also, the General Assembly could include this in a land use package, which would then permit, it could be voluntary or it could be required as a permissible element. It wouldn't be everything. So there's a couple of different pathways to pursue for folks to be able to implement this type of change should they desire.
Man, I could talk to you all day about this. I'm just fascinated with this and how close it seems like a potential solution, if not a mitigating solution, is right there. And yet we're just sort of stuck with a status quo that really creates nothing but disincentive for wanting to do exactly what we all admit we want to do. And that is to get back to a place where there are starter homes for families that they can live in until they outgrow them and move on to the... It's amazing to me that we've put ourselves here and we can't seem to get unstuck. I mean, it's just fascinating. I love that you'd come on and share so much time with us. We'll have you back on in the future. What I really want to do is bring you out to Douglas County and have you talk to all the fire folks out there and say, let's be the first county in the state to go just nuts with the code and see what happens. But we'll see what happens in the future, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, George, it's my pleasure. And like we said before, like when we put our minds to it as Americans, there's nothing we can't accomplish. And so, you know, we're at the precipice of that. I'm an optimist and I believe in us and I believe in our state. We can do this. We're getting close. Let's push it across the finish line, as you just stated. Appreciate the time.
Peter Lafari, Common Sense Institute Housing Fellow. And I know there's a report out there that you had some input on, and you can find that at Common Sense Institute CO. That's for the Colorado part because they're everywhere now. .org. Go Yankees.
Yes, George. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Hey, listen, we're going to cut away for a break. We took that segment long, but honestly, and I hope you find that interesting too. It's amazing to me the things that I learn from folks on topics where I'm like, I don't really understand it. I'm not sure what's going on. And this dude tells me stuff and I go, wait, we can fix this. I mean, this doesn't even require us taking back the state legislature. That's part of it. But man, we can fix this for our communities. That's amazing. And with a guy with kids who are someday going to be in a position to buy a home, and I'd love for them to consider doing that here once we get our hands wrapped around the public safety issue. It's just fascinating stuff. My thanks to Peter Lafari. Listen, we're going to cut away for a break. We're going to come back. Happy to take any calls on what you heard there. But also, I want to get back into the booby trap thing. Lots of texts that have come on. And we're going to get back to the phone calls. We had a couple callers that we said, hey, we're going to take a little bit of a break to get smarter by Peter. Stick around. It's George Brockner on The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. My thanks to Peter Lafari, the Common Sense Institute Housing Fellow. You can find the report that he was a part of there at commonsenseinstituteco.org. Joining us on the phone right now, and you can join her as well at 303-696-1971, is Carla. Carla, welcome aboard. And is it Carla with a C or a K?
I respond to either, but I spell it with a C.
Okay, great. What are your thoughts, Carla?
Well, there's a very interesting product right now being built out in Green Valley on the Aurora side because of the restrictions of Denver's building code, and not zoning, but building code. And it is being put up by, they're being put up by a company called NO2. It sounds like it's on the periodic table.
Right.
But
it does.
It's a division of Oakwood Homes, and they are factory built modules being built in this region. I don't know exactly where their factory is, but they plan to expand. And they're brought in, they're two stories, put on a crawl space on a foundation. Once they're finished, you won't know that they're modular. We went out and looked at them. And they're 900 to 1,100 square feet, and these are intended for
first home buyers. Oh, so you went and checked these things out. You went and checked these things out. You went and looked at these.
Yeah, you can, if you go down to South Colorado Boulevard to the University Hills Plaza Shopping Center, they have a storefront there, and it's like buying a car, buying a Tesla in a mall. They're selling them out of the storefront. Huh. You don't go out to the site and look at a model. You go into the storefront, and it's beautifully done. They're selling these units completely finished, including a washer and dryer, for $300,000 to $350,000. And they're also planning a division of single-level units, modular homes again, for retirement folks. So I think it's a very interesting thing.
By the way, Carla, that they couldn't do it in Denver because of some restrictions on that particular product,
I believe, or? I asked them specifically if they were going to do a product for the ADU, accessory dwelling unit market, and they said no because they can't get, at this point, it's too difficult to get a standard plan approved by the building department. But it seems like something that would really lend itself to the ADU market too. But they plan to have a larger factory in Denver and give tours. Now, I don't know what their schedule is, but I think it's very exciting because they're really hitting the market at a totally affordable, I think, for, you know, young teachers, firefighters, police officers. That's the market they're going after.
It strikes me, Carla, too, that this is another example of where Aurora or some other municipality can give an alternative to what's going on in Denver. We've already seen it with their efforts to crack down on car theft and retail theft. This could be something else where they, you know, take another look at whatever the code is they have, because it sounds like whatever difference exists between Denver and Aurora has allowed this particular product or housing unit to be developed. Man, maybe they could go hog wild here and change the code a ton, consistent with what Peter said. And maybe even come up with something more. I mean, I'd love to see multiple home builders get into this, because that will further drive the price down.
I think it will. And I, you know, kudos to Aurora. I think I am a Denver resident, but I think our building department has stifled some things, and our planning department, and they need to be a little more progressive, frankly, in what they will authorize.
Carla, I love that you listen. Can I try to convert you into another opinion maker on a different topic? And that is the topic of the booby trapping. I want to try on the booby trapping thing. Did you hear that description of that case out of Highlands Ranch?
You know, I heard it, but I didn't listen closely enough to be able to comment recently.
So these are folks like 50, 60s that have a house that they put up some signage. I have not seen the picture. I've been told about it. Some signage that was like no trespassing or stay out or whatever. And some guy going door to door, clearly not interested in a crime, got his leg caught up in some wire, or I presume it was like a trip wire, and it caused a small explosion, which turns out to be part of a shotgun shell. Boom, and it blows up. And this guy suffers from, at least what's reported in the paper, some sort of injury to his eyes and his ears. Don't know how severe, don't know if it's long-lasting, don't know any of that stuff. But he gets taken to the hospital. The police come out, and they check it out. It's the sheriff's office, and they find that there's other booby traps consistent with this. Had a caller named Mark who had said it's not a booby trap, it's an alarm. But had you given some thought to the idea of booby trapping a house when you've said stay off my property, and whether or not you think that's okay? I mean, what thoughts do you have on that?
Well, I've long heard proposals from engineering friends about an alarm, and maybe this is available, which actually sets off the sound of a large dog barking.
They have those.
Yeah. But this one, it sounds like he had to physically trip something, which may cause other problems. There's adequate signage out there. It should be okay.
That's the question. If you put signs on your property, and in Denver, where I know that you said you live in Denver, I presume mm-hmm. you've purchased a whole series of bulletproof clothing that you can. I'm kidding.
I want to tell you, we don't even have an alarm on our house. I don't feel like it's, I feel like my neighborhood's really good. We've lived here for 18 years, our house was wired for an alarm. We chose not to buy one. My husband's booby trap system are a series of lights and radios when we're out of town that go off at odd times.
Okay.
Knowing our neighbors and we have really great neighbors, and it's a great community.
Well, Carly, you've hit upon, I think, the hidden secret there that nobody seems to talk about, and that is a strong block, a strong neighborhood where you know and care about each other. It's the best security system out there. If everybody's looking out for each other, you don't need all those other things. I still think you're crazy for not having one, but I get it. but if you had a house, Carly, that you put a sign up that said, you know, no trespassing, no solicitation, words to that effect, whatever it is. But it doesn't say anything like, hey, we're going to blow up your foot or, you know, the shotgun shell if you come on here. If it's those other words, do you feel like a property owner ought to be able to set up a booby trap for anyone that steps onto their property?
I don't know. I don't know. We do have a sign in our front door that says no soliciting. That seems to work.
Yeah, I believe me. That's a sign. I've gone door to door on behalf of friends who've been running for office. and that's a horrible one to see, because all you want to do is put a little door knocker on there. And if
we still
product,
get those,
maybe,
but
yeah
we still
but
get
I don't
those.
Leave
we
them.
We just don't get somebody selling us something. That's all.
Yeah, but I don't even want to leave the door hanger, because my thought is, if I'm the person that put no soliciting in the sign, it matters to me enough that I've went ahead and put that on my house. You don't want to be a political candidate who puts something up there and they look at it and go, let's see who can't read. Oh, it's this guy. It's this Brockler guy who wants to be the DA. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be that person that does something like that. So I think it's a good deterrent, I hope, for all that stuff. But I'm interested in knowing, and if you listen, Carly, some callers, we had Jack and some other folks that had called in when we had Peter on. I'm just interested to know what they think, because right now, John Kellner, who's the DA for the 18th, is the guy in charge of the Douglas County prosecution stuff. He's the one that is going to be taking a look at whether or not to charge these people with a crime and what that crime ought to be. And I'm just interested to see what people's opinions are about it. Like, what do they think? Like, no, I wouldn't prosecute, not for this, but here's where I would, that kind of thing. But Carly, you've been great to chime in. Thanks for giving us the heads up on the kinds of things that are going on there. And thank you for listening.
Yeah, go look at that showroom on South Colorado Boulevard. It's very interesting.
What's it called again? What's the name of the place?
N-O and then 2, the number 2. It looks like something off of – I don't know how they selected that name, because it didn't ring any bells. So that's why we wandered in there to see what it was. And it's a showroom for these
Billy's got
homes.
A setup in his Mercedes that's nitrous oxide, but I don't know if that's NO2 right there. Something like that.
It's a weird name, but it's Oakwood Homes. It's a division of Oakwood Homes.
Hey, thanks for telling us about that, Carla. Thanks for the phone call. Listen, we're going to cut away for a break, but before we do, I want to make sure I spend a little bit of time telling you about, and we're talking about homes, by the way, so the segue is perfect here. You may be looking to make that upgrade from your starter home into a bigger home, like Peter LaFari from Common Sense Institute had told us about. You may be looking to go the other direction. I mean, right now, my dad and his wife have a bigger house than we ever owned when it was full of me and my brother and my sister. It's never been bigger. And that was cool for a while, but I can sense that they have real interest in wanting to downsize. You might be in that position. And maybe it's less discretionary. Maybe you have to make a move. You're going across town, and it doesn't make sense anymore to live way out in Evergreen. You got to live closer to God's country, which is Parker, Colorado. You need to call Gay Ribble and the Reynolds and Power Home team. These are the folks that know how to navigate these waters in a way that causes you less stress than anyone else can imagine for that kind of a stressful thing. Do you remember that time when you first bought your first house? I do. I've bought several houses. I don't think I've ever owned more than one at a time, but I'm not rich, folks. But I have had to go through the closing process. It's stressful, man. There's just so much paperwork, so much money, so many consequences to what you do. And you keep asking yourself, did we get the right price? Did we get the right house? Let Gay and the team at Empower Home help to answer those questions for you, help to put you in a position where you don't regret any of the decisions that you've made regarding the biggest purchase of your life, because that's exactly what it is. Here's how you do that. You give them a call at 833-301-SOLD. And yep, SOLD spells sold for a very good reason. They have all the buyers, 14,000 plus buyers in waiting for when you list your home. Yes, Gay, thank you. 833-301-SOLD. Here's what you get. Not just experience, expertise, and great customer service. You get your home sold for on average $30,000 more than other folks do. You get your home sold quicker on average than any other folks do. And you also have access to things like the Sold in 5 program, where you're still getting 6.1% more for your home in 5. You also have the free home workshops, the Empower Home homefreeworkshops.com, empowerhomefreeworkshops.com. Easy to get to. Make yourself smarter. Whatever you decide to do, make it an informed decision. And that happens with calling 833-301-SOLD, 833-301-SOLD. That's Gay Ribble with the Ribble Group and Power Home team. Give them a call today. When we come back, we're going to get back to the phone lines. Let's talk some booby trap and stuff. What advice would you give to the DA, John Kellner? Should he charge? Would you convict on the facts that you know as they are right now? It's George Brockler on The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS. Here's 710 KNUS talking about that topic. We've had it started a couple times here. I just don't feel like we have completely explored it because it's interesting to me. And I gave to KDVR last night from the ball field, by the way. They reached out and said, hey, let's talk about this booby trap thing. What do you think about it? Is it illegal? And should it be? Should these people be charged with the crimes that they were booked into by the Douglas County Sheriff's Office? And I said, I do think that you need to be prosecuted for it because it's the only way to send a message to others not to go there. And there's good reasons to not have booby traps, but I also think that our particular audience tends to be pretty liberty-leaning, and they're folks like me that believe that property rights matter. And I think for a lot of folks, it's, well, wait, if I put up a sign that says, don't come onto my property, and you do that, dude, it's like buyer beware. It's caveat enterer. That's just my own way of changing up the Latin, caveat enterer, get it? And they should just suffer whatever fates that I can put on them. Now, we heard from Mark when we first started talking about this that, no, I think this is much more of an alarm. And what that tells me is Mark thinks there are limits. And he said that at the end of his call that, hey, if this dude ends up getting hurt and his eye gets injured or something happens like that, I feel differently about it. I'm just not sure how any type of an explosion like that, and maybe there's a way to do it where it's safe, cannot be viewed as a potential risk to someone. But we have an in-house expert on booby traps. His name is Billy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, yeah, man. I'm looking for a confession here. The statute's run unless
it
involves a dead body.
Yeah, no, it's not a horrible booby trap, not like they had in Highlands Ranch, but I do have a little bit of experience with setting up some booby traps, and primarily the number one story that I've got deals with me in middle school. And as George knows, I carry with me, oh, hang on a second, talks amongst yourselves, got to put this person on hold.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, it's funny here because we've got texts coming in, and yeah, we've got some texts. Somebody texted in, is a booby trap equals a bra?
Oh, jeez. Let me tell you what, I'll tell
the
story in a second.
Listener.
Let
Thank
me go
you.
Talk to the person on the phone. I want to give them priority and not run my mouth here. So let me talk to them, and if we need to, we can circle back.
Yeah, I got
back
plenty of texts, man.
Excellent. Thank you.
I got plenty of texts. Because here's another text. I read that they had one in the backyard, too. I would think that one would be legal. No, that's a great question. What if it was the backyard? Does it change the dynamic? And it does for me in terms of the analysis as a prosecutor, because the front door, and here's where you have, that's why I brought up the Girl Scout thing. You can't just say nobody can ever set foot on my driveway or in my walkway or come to my front door ever. And I'll tell you why. We have rights of way that exist for things like the natural gas people, the electricity people. How about public safety? I mean, picture a scenario where a house is on fire on the block and law enforcement, including firefighters, are like, we need to clear the block. We need to evacuate. Maybe it's some toxically. I don't know. It doesn't matter. They're not prohibited from coming onto your property to give you notice and to try to save you. But here's the other thing. Firefighters don't want other homes to burn. And so imagine a scenario where we say, hey, once someone posts a sign that says no trespassing, that's it. Can you imagine firefighters trying to call into the house, no answer, and they let people burn to death? And then the family members go, why didn't you just go knock on the damn door, dude? And he goes, well, they had a sign. Said no trespassing, so I guess it was kind of like a do not resuscitate. It was a property DNR there, and we just let them expire. I mean, there's no universe in which that makes any sense. So the idea that, again, if you're on a ranch somewhere and your house is a half mile offset from the road, I feel a little bit differently about that. But I imagine this is Highlands Ranch suburbia, right? The idea that you can booby trap something, and the Girl Scout, who maybe she misses the sign. Maybe she doesn't see it. Maybe she doesn't think that no trespassing doesn't apply to her. I'm not going to sign up the parents to child abuse for that kind of thing either. But that's what we're going to have, or the fireman, or a postman, or the HelloFresh people, or whatever service that you use. It's so indiscriminate. I can't imagine saying, as a matter of public policy, we're going to let you decide what level of injury you put on someone who decides to set foot on your porch. The back of the house, similar concerns in terms of, do we want for someone that is looking to break into your garage from the back or your basement through a garden level window? Can you sign them up to be killed or maimed? I don't know. I'm interested to know. We're going to find out from Billy when we come back. It's 303-696-1971. We'll keep going through the text. It's George Brockler right here on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.